Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde. Ich begrüße Sie zu einer weiteren Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt aus Moskau oder ich muss sagen, vielleicht etwas aus der Nähe von Moskau in ländlicher Umgebung. Ich befinde mich hier in einem Haus, in einer wunderschönen, waldigen Umgebung. An einer etwas entlegeneren Straße. Und hier habe ich die Freude und die Ehre zu begrüßen in diesem Programm einen sehr bekannten Mann in Russland. Es handelt sich um Slava Nikonov. Er ist geboren 1956, stammt aus einer sehr berühmten Familie. Sein Großvater war der langjährige Außenminister der Sowjetunion Wjatscheslaw Molotow, eine ganz wichtige Figur damals für die Regierung des großen Vorsitzenden Stalin und auch eine sehr bewegte Familiengeschichte, die da im Hintergrund spielt. Slava Nikonov ist der Deputy Chairman, das heißt der stellvertretende Vorsitzende des State Duma Committees of Foreign Affairs, also das ist die außenpolitische Kommission der Duma. Er ist auch universitär tätig, er ist an der Hochschule lehrend, politische Wissenschaften und er ist auch der Gastgeber einer bekannten TV-Show, The Big Game heißt die. Und wie er mir erzählte, muss er zwei Sendungen pro Tag machen, das heißt, unsere Zeit ist hier beschränkt. Und ich werde jetzt gleich wechseln auf Englisch, damit wir uns unterhalten können. Yes, Mr. Nikonov, thanks for receiving us. Thanks for this interview. I just told my viewers that you have to do two TV shows a day, so the time frame is rather tight. We don't want to take too much of your time. But thanks for having us.
Thank you for the introduction.
Great. Well, let's start with your family legacy first. I mean, your grandfather was an extremely important personality in Russian, in Soviet history, Vyacheslav Molotov. I mean, everybody knows him, even in Europe, of course, this name is very famous. You wrote a book about your grandfather. What's for you personally?
Three books even,
I'm sorry. What's for you personally the legacy or the life lesson of your famous grandfather?
The legacy. Well, I inherited one-fourth of myself, his genes. And I inherited his name. Actually, he was an important, of course, person in Russian history, but I was born a week after he was dismissed as foreign minister of the Soviet Union, and I was 1 year old when he became the enemy of the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. So I was growing up in the family of the enemy of the Communist Party.
From hero to enemy.
Right. He was against Khrushchev. And so he ended up spending some time in Mongolia and then in Vienna in the Atomic Energy Commission. Mm-hmm. Good for me, he came back to Moscow, and I had a chance to spend quite a lot of time with him.
I mean, he died very old. He was almost 100 years old. What did you discuss with him? What was the most interesting thing he told you about history, about life, about politics?
Well, everything. Everything was interested. He knew everyone in the 19th century. He was living in the White House with Roosevelt. He was living at Chequers with Churchill. He met every single politician of the 20th century. He dined with Hitler. So, lots of stories.
What did he say?
Lots of stories.
What did he say about the arch dictator Hitler? I mean, this political dictator who pushed the world into hell, one can say. What did you discuss about him, this issue, what this Hitler was all about and why Germany somehow fell into his spell, under his spell?
Well, I don't think that his perspective was very different from that of historians. Hitler was a function of the German defeat in World War I and then of the Great Depression and of German nationalism. Mm-hmm. He didn't consider him to be a smart person, though. And he thought that Hitler made a great mistake by taking Russia. That was his biggest mistake. Mm-hmm. Course, and he was absolutely unprepared to deal with Russia. By the way, Russia has always been underestimated by all sort of aggressors and you know, those who pretended to be the masters of the world. Mm-hmm. That's what happens now, by the way.
What is the most important thing you have learned about Russia and probably generally about political life from your grandfather?
Well, I don't think that in politics something is less important than other things. Yeah, everything is important. First of all, love your country and do the best to the people of your country. That's probably was his major message.
Mm-hmm. He served under Stalin. Stalin is a person who is totally vilified, or if I look back in my school education, Stalin is considered to be a very evil man. What's your observation there? What's your family experience?
Was Stalin an evil man? Probably he was. You know, in the 20th century, there were many evil people. Was Churchill an evil man? You know, Britain conquered half of the world, and they conducted all sort of colonial wars, killing millions of people. Was he an evil person? Mm-hmm. Probably he was. Mm-hmm. But that's not all about mm-hmm. Churchill, you know. The same about Stalin. My family suffered, by the way. Mm-hmm. As you may know, my grandmother mm-hmm. was in jail for more than 4 years. Mm-hmm. For being supposedly one of the masters of a Jewish conspiracy in the Soviet Union. But at the same time, Stalin for sure is a big historic figure. Mm-hmm. Historic figures sometimes are brutal. Mm-hmm. Napoleon was brutal. Alexander the Great was brutal. Stalin was very brutal, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for sure. But at the same time, he managed to recreate the country after it was destroyed by the revolution of 1917, mm-hmm. and made it a great power again. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather was in charge of the Russian government. He was the prime minister for more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And during those 10 years, Russia's GDP increased by 850%. Mm-hmm. So these guys knew how to do things. And they also defeated Hitler. Mm-hmm. They defeated Hitler. Some people tend to forget that 80% of German divisions in World War II were defeated by Stalin's Red Army.
It's interesting. Do you follow these discussions? When I look at newspapers in Europe, in Great Britain especially, they tend to minimize the contribution of the Soviet Union in defeating Russia. There, for example, you read articles that say, well, you know, the Russians, they got all their material from the United States. I mean, basically, it was not the Russians who defeated Hitler. What do you think about these theories? Do they resonate here, or is that something you have
seen? Yeah, of course, this is regarding Russia as a damn lie, as everything they usually report about Russia in the Western media is just one of those lies. Mm. Yes, of course, there were supplies from the United States and Great Britain. An official statistic, this was 4%. In my research, I found out it may be closer to 7-8%. Mm-hmm. But in general, of course, it was the Soviet Union which defeated Germany. It was fighting with Germany for several years, just without any assistance. And there were periods during the war that no assistance was coming whatsoever. and we lost 27 million people in the war, and 18 million of those 27 were civilians, just murdered.
You had
in the camps.
You have a very interesting life. I mean, even in your childhood, you had these historical personalities telling you stories firsthand. Then you served, when I'm informed correctly, in the governments of presidents, I mean, leaders, Gorbachev, Yeltsin, and Putin. What do these three personalities stand for in Russian history?
Well, I actually worked only in the staff of Gorbachev. During Yeltsin years, I was already a member of the Duma, and during Putin years as well.
But you saw them from, you know, your own eyes, from close range.
Quite a few times, but speaking, working for, meaning in the administration, that was in Gorbachev years only. They were completely different people. Regarding from the historic viewpoint, actually, the easiest way to measure their success or failure rating is by measuring their ratings. By the end of his term, Gorbachev had a rating of around 3% approval. Actually, the same with Yeltsin. By the end of his term, he had around 3% of approval. So Russian people regarded both Gorbachev and Yeltsin as great failures, and for good reason. Gorbachev was, I think, he had probably good instincts, but no, he was not a very smart politician. He didn't really understand what he was doing. And the fact he wanted to reform the country, and instead of reforming it, so probably they switched on the light centrally. So Gorbachev was has pretty good instincts, but I he was not a smart politician, and he had an idea of reforming the Soviet Union. Instead of that, his reforms led to the destruction of the country, and I do regret the destruction of my country, and everyone do that, because that was the my homeland. As for Yeltsin, I don't think he had good instincts. I don't think he was a smart politician as well. He was a political animal, of course, and he knew how to win elections, especially at the beginning, but the results of his presidency was disastrous, because Russia lost more than half of the economy as a result of his economic policies. So again, it was a complete disastrous period in the Russian, in the Soviet history, Russian history, Gorbachev-Yeltsin transition. As for Putin, you know, he was the opposite to Gorbachev and Yeltsin, because unlike Yeltsin, he was young at the beginning. He was not drinking. He was well fit. And he was for economic growth. He didn't care too much about what you call democratic reforms, but he cared about making Russia a great country, restoring it its economy. When Putin took over, we were the 14th economy in the world, and now we're the fourth. So it's quite a development. And people measure, of course, success or failures of the presidents by their living standards and by their feelings. And actually, right now, it is the first time since the beginning of polling in this country, then more than 70% of the people say that the country is moving in the right direction for the first time since the beginning of polling. So today, Russians feel better than ever in my lifetime.
It's interesting. Is it the problem or is it the concern in Russia that Putin is such a long-standing leader that his term is now really long? You know, I mean, even he is not immortal. I mean, there will be the day when he has to step down. Is this a reason for concern in Russia that his term is so long?
No, it is not, actually, because again, looking back in history, most successful Russian leaders mm-hmm. were long-term, mm-hmm. be it Peter the Great or Catherine the Great, or Stalin, by the mm-hmm. way, mm-hmm. who is also considered as a mm-hmm. successful leader by most of the people. So it's not a problem. By the way, Churchill was a long-term leader.
Adenauer.
Adenauer was. Mm-hmm. So even Frau Merkel was. Mm-hmm. quite long term, but no, it's not considered to be a problem. He's still supported mm-hmm. by, well, you know, the election was just held and mm-hmm. more than 80% of the people mm-hmm. voted for him, almost 90%, mm-hmm. and that's real figure.
I mean, in the West, if I read my newspapers, they say, well, these elections, they're all fake elections, you know, and the Russians, they have to vote at gunpoint, more or less. What can you say to these reports?
Well, but you should go to the street and ask people whom they voted for. That's mm-hmm. easy. Mm-hmm. And why. Mm-hmm. And they will tell you. Mm-hmm. Of course, they voted for Putin because they feel better, much better now. Mm-hmm. And they are not ashamed for their country. Mm-hmm. And they live better than in Yeltsin or previous mm-hmm. times.
I mean, this is the impression I have. And I made my programs also from supermarkets, from restaurants. Here in Moscow, of course, Moscow is not Russia, but our viewers are totally surprised about the extremely high living standard and the cleanliness, you know, of the whole city. It's really impressive. What would you say is the biggest misunderstanding in the West about today's Russia?
Well, it's not about today's Russia. This misunderstanding is centuries long. And actually, the perception of Russia has not changed for at least 5-6 centuries. Mm-hmm. And it began, I think, in the 15th century, when Russia became free from the Mongols and the West was expanding. Columbus, great expansion of, you know, Portuguese Spaniards went westward, and the Eastern Western Germany, I mean the great German Empire, Roman Empire of the German mm-hmm. nation, and the Poles were looking for their, you know, Americas, and here was Russia. Mm-hmm. And there were quite a few, you know, diplomatic missions to Russia, to Tsar Ivan III, then Basil III, his son and father of Ivan the Great. They said, okay, you're a great nation. There are nice people living here. They're all Christians. They're all God-loving. They are respectful for law and order and so on. You should become part of the great Roman Catholic family. Mm-hmm. You need just to take the crown from the Pope of Rome and become one of us. Mm-hmm. That means being captured by the new rising powers of mm-hmm. Europe. And actually there were some, you know, hesitations here. Even Ivan III, Basil III, they're thinking about this option. And once Basil III even sent his ambassador to Rome to negotiate the deal, the problem was when the ambassador came to Rome, Pope was not there. He was just kicked out by some, you know, French duke and was... was hiding somewhere mm-hmm. in France, mm-hmm. and he couldn't find him. Mm-hmm. then they followed him, provided him with some furs, which kept him going for another couple of years. But the ambassadors come back and said that it's not serious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And after this, the Russians decided, no, we're not going to be like this. Here we are. Here is the Tsar. We are Russians. We are Orthodox. We're not going to be Catholic. And that's it. And immediately after that, the nice people became bad people, savage people. Christians became heretics because they were not Catholic. Mm-hmm. The people who were for law and order became immediately the people of slave mentality. Mm-hmm. And you go along the line. And actually, the picture of Russia you get in every newspaper in the West today, it's a brutal, non-democratic, with slave psychology, all this nonsense. It's from there. Mm-hmm. And it's centuries long. It's part of the Western psyche. Mm-hmm. It's a mirror in which the Westerners look and say, no, we are not like that. Mm-hmm. And it is already part of Western mentality. Mm-hmm. And to give up this image of Russia means to lose something mm-hmm. in yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't think it is possible to change. Mm-hmm. The major misunderstanding is that it is an overall misunderstanding mm-hmm. of Russia. Yeah. And, you know, as of today, you just said, you saw Moscow is so clean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Moscow is not like the rest of Russia. Actually, the rest of Russia is not very different from Moscow. Mm-hmm. it's another mm-hmm. misperception. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's cleaner. Mm-hmm. It's more dynamic. Mm-hmm. It has better food, and it has better shops mm-hmm. than any mm-hmm. Western capital I know mm-hmm. of.
So you would say that in the West there is an ingrained feeling of unjustified superiority. I mean, the guys in the West, they think this is some kind of inferior culture. Russia, they were different from us, therefore they are minor.
We're different.
Is it a certain kind of colonial attitude?
No, it's racism. Yeah. It's racism. The same thing, I think the Westerners have the same feeling about other nations. Mm. Especially Americans, mm. They have this superiority complex, but mm-hmm. it's typical of the West in general. Though I think it's absolutely unjustified, mm-hmm. but they have the same complex about the Chinese, the Indians, and Africans, and Latin Americans, and everybody, mm-hmm. everyone else. They consider themselves to be on top of the world. Mm-hmm. They're the third world, the first world, mm-hmm. the developed mm-hmm. world. I think those both concepts are absolutely false. Mm-hmm. What about the first world? Mm-hmm. Why first? Mm-hmm. Men came from Africa, you know. Mm-hmm. First great civilizations were in the Middle mm-hmm. East, mm-hmm. In Iraq, mm-hmm. or China, mm-hmm. or India. Mm-hmm. First in what? Mm-hmm. The same, the developed and developing, you know. I think, yes, there is a developing world, which is Russia, China, India, and other, and non-developing, which is Europe. Mm-hmm. That might be true, mm-hmm. but otherwise it's nonsense. So the whole perception, of course, of Russia and this superiority complex is there. I don't think it is possible to do something with that. It's centuries long. Mm-hmm. It's not yeah. something which exists now. The problem with the difference of perception of Russia mm-hmm. and, say, China, India, mm-hmm. Africa. It's one of my Canadian friends told me. He told me, the problem with you that you are white. So people in the West look at you and say, oh, they look like us, they should be like us, mm-hmm. and you are not. Mm-hmm. And that yeah. makes them absolutely crazy, yeah. because they think they should be like you, like mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. No, we are not like yeah. you. Well, Russians are different. Yeah. Russian civilization is different. Mm-hmm. And the way we look, and the fact that we look the same doesn't mean we are the same and should be the same. And you think we should be the same, and we don't want to. We want to be Russians.
What would you say is the essence of Russian civilization? What does it mean to be Russian? What do you mean by that word?
I wrote a book like 800 pages on that matter, but I have a smaller book of around 400 pages.
So you have to boil it down to one sentence.
In one sentence, it's really hard. Well, it is a... it's a civilization which exists in Russia, which is now not 1/6 but 1/8 of the human of the surface of Earth, and which has the probably the longest sovereign history. I think there are only two countries in the world which have a sovereign history of more than 500 years. The second is England. But, all other countries were either colonies or did not exist 500 years ago or were captured at some time of... Russia and England were not. But you should agree that Russia had a somewhat more problematic neighborhood than England.
Not on an island.
Just... Northern Ireland, some Scots, and fish, and that's sure. that's about it.
And you had an open territory from all sides.
And we had the steppe. And, you know, the people from the steppe were coming to Russia at least twice a year. Why Russians do not surrender? It's, by the way, the problem in today's war in Ukraine, because it's a civil war, and there are Russians on both sides. And Russians do not surrender.
They refuse to surrender.
Russians do not surrender at all. Why so? Because it's in our genes. When in Europe, for example, there were always the wars. Probably there were no less wars in Europe than in Russia with the steppe. But the wars in Europe was a war of kings, of dukes, and so on. So if the army of the enemy come to the city, if you surrender, you just pay taxes to another king, and that's it. It's no problem. Here, when the guys from the steppe are coming, you'd better resist, because the only option for you, you're either dead or you become slave. That's it. There is no way to survive. And so there is no reason to surrender. And they were coming twice a year. And that's why the society was organized in a way to, for all the people in the city where the king, the Russian knight, was living, was organized not in, you know, on the basis of professions, guilds, but on hundreds and thousands to take arms and fight. That was a very different organization of society. That's one thing.
So it's a society of that permanent struggle to survive.
Permanent struggle to survive. And it's from the neighborhood and from the weather. Russia is the coldest country on Earth. Believe it or not, Moscow, one of the warmest places in Russia, is the coldest capital on Earth. It's much colder than Stockholm, for example. And 2/3 of Russia is covered with ice, 2/3 of the year. Struggling with the climate, very low harvests, especially for early Russia, that was the problem. You put one seed. If you're lucky, you get three as a result. In Western Europe, you put one seed and you get minimum 10. It's a different wealth of the peasant population, and Russia was a peasant country till the beginning of industrializations, Stalin's industrialization. 85% of the population lived in the villages. It was a village civilization rather than anything else.
I mean, one trait I see in the Russian, I mean, I'm not an expert on Russia, but something that is fascinating is that you're a multicultural country. I mean, it resembles a bit Switzerland. It's a huge Switzerland. You have all these different cultures, different languages, even different religions, and they coexist, not in a melting pot like in the United States. When you become American, you cut off your tradition, you become American, but you are like a multiplicity of nations. What's the secret that this vast country, this huge sum of micro civilizations, is holding together? What does it need to hold this whole thing together?
Yeah, I think it's also one of the what you can describe of specific features of Russian civilization. It's multicultural. It has been from the very beginning. Mm. The development of Russia was an expansion of the peasant population because of the scarce of land, mm-hmm. and the population growing had to move, mm-hmm. to some places to find some more farmland, which had been recaptured from the woods, and mm-hmm. That was a very difficult process. But moving eastward mostly, the Russian population never imposed its ideas, mm-hmm. its mode of life to the local people. It's very different from the Western colonization, mm-hmm. which was, you know, eliminating mm-hmm. Aztecs and, mm-hmm. you know, robbing everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not about that. It was a peasant expansion, peaceful mostly. And Russians are very acceptive of other cultures. Mm-hmm. Our mind is open to East and West. Mm-hmm. Russians probably now are more aware of Western literature, culture, than the Westerners themselves. The Westerners tend to forget about cultural roots.
And religion?
As for religion, Orthodox religion was, of course, the major religion here, but we tolerated the other religions as well. They were not imposing religious views on others. For example, in Kiev Rus, and of course, we regard ourselves as part of mm-hmm. that history. When Christianity was brought to Rus by Vladimir, yeah. the king of Kiev, who was before that the king of Novgorod, yeah. you know, that was one country, and there was a synagogue in the city. He was thinking about introducing Islam civilization, but Islamic people were quite close to Russia, and you know the Great Bulgaria, mm-hmm. you know, Tatarstan, it was already Muslim, and there was no problem dealing with them. So this tolerance was always here. As for Jewish, therefore Jewish community in Kiev, in 19th century, and Khazar Empire, which was close to Russia, mm-hmm. was Jewish and religion. So yeah. we had a very mixed cultural background, and there was no feeling of being superior, yeah. because this superiority complex, which is so typical for the West, is not at all typical for Russians.
It's so interesting, because when I look back in school, or my parents, of course, communism in Switzerland, a lot of people were against communism. And so our explanation for Russia that we have heard, and you read it now in the newspapers, always was, of course, the Russians are genetical imperialists. They are land-hungry conquerors, and what holds this country together is the iron grip of the ruler in Moscow. And this picture is somehow, you see it now, also projected on your current leader, on President Putin. He's this iron-fisted dictator holding a country together which would otherwise fall apart. This is something even, you know, famous American professors, Stanford University, have been at lectures where they explain, you know, this is the picture in the west of Russia, iron grip, dictatorship, that's the only reason, holding everything together. What do you say to these perceptions from the West?
Well, as I've said from the very beginning, all perceptions are wrong. Of course, strong...
There is no grain of truth in that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the problem is, of course, strong leader is something which Russians like. Mm-hmm. That's it. Russians can forgive their leaders whatever, you know, mm-hmm. except one thing, mm-hmm. weakness. Mm-hmm. Weak leader is no leader. Mm-hmm. And yes, when the leader is weak, then the country can fall apart. And there can be all sort of uprisings and whatever, you know. Russians are not people with slave mentality. There mm-hmm. were so many uprisings during all Russian history that yeah. it's just...
And terrible uprisings.
Amazing, I mean, terrible, like Razin, Pugachev, they killed, you know, hundreds of thousands of people.
They killed tsars?
Well, yeah, actually...
Alexander?
more than that, actually, a czar... statistically was the most dangerous profession in Russia because the murder rate for czars was much bigger than for the, you know, for servicemen in the army. That was true. So it's not about dictatorial force which imposes itself. But Russian territorial expansion was a function of, as I've said, of peasants' colonization, first place.
And security?
Of security, of course. And then what was the major enlargement of Russian territory? We became the heirs of the Chinggisid Empire. The empire of Chinggis Khan was the biggest in the world. It was, territorially, it was bigger than the British Empire.
And then the Roman Empire.
And much better, much bigger than the Roman Empire, of course. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest whatsoever. When the Golden Horde, the heir of this empire, collapsed, Russia just inherited it.
You ended up with it.
We ended up being part of the empire. We became the most vibrant, vital power of that empire to inherit it. Mm-hmm. So we inherited this huge empire, which was not widely populated, I mean, in Siberia and the Far East.
But how authoritarian, actually, is the Russian form of government? Because I think, I mean, you have to understand always both sides of the coin, you know, the West and the East. I think there are a lot of misunderstandings, but I mean, one irritating issue is that many people, friends of mine in the West, they say, well, you know, Russia is just, it's so authoritarian, you know, it's really a tough government. Can you describe a bit, what does it need to be a successful leader in the eyes of the Russians? What does the leader of Russia has to consider? What mistakes can he never do? How uncontrolled is his rule? What can he do? What can he decide? What can he not do? Give us a bit an impression there.
You see, again, we are speaking in Western terms.
Sure.
And all these terms like democratic, authoritarian, is something from, American textbooks. I don't think America is a democracy. Mm. Democracy is the rule of the people.
So Switzerland would be considered a democracy, a direct democracy.
What does it mean? Do people run Switzerland?
Absolutely.
People? People run Switzerland?
Absolutely. With referenda initiatives. But we're talking about Russia.
Okay, we can talk about it. But, well, first of all, we'll need to talk about the vocabulary.
Yeah, sure.
Because you asked me how authoritarian. Yeah. My question is, what is authoritarianism? Mm-hmm. You just said that you cannot read a single nice thing about Russia in Western media. Is it about authoritarianism? I think it is. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, lack of freedom of expression in the West, which does not exist, I think. Mm. Is it authoritarian? In the European Union, the countries are now run by the people who cannot even ask questions about American domination. Mm-hmm. German government cannot even ask a question who blew up Nord Stream 2. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the right to ask this question. Mm-hmm. Definitely we know who did that, mm-hmm. why they did it, but they don't even ask. Mm-hmm. That was a German pipeline. Mm-hmm. And the Germans were not allowed to ask that question. Is it about authoritarianism or democracy? Do European governments act according to the will of their own people while they are not asking such questions? No, I think their policies vis-a-vis Russia, for example, is absolutely counterproductive to the interests of their countries. They cut off the energy supplies from Russia, mm-hmm. which destroys the economy in Germany, France, everywhere. Germany is under deindustrialization process. Why? Because Americans told them do that, and they are doing that. Mm-hmm. It's against the interests of the German people, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. So democracy means, for me, is acting in accordance with the will of your own people. The will of the Russian people, for example, during the Yeltsin time, at the beginning was for Yeltsin to do what he did. Then he lost his popularity. Here comes Putin. And he expresses the will of the Russian people. They really, in the Kremlin, they really follow public opinion polls, know what people want. They know how to move the country forward. So to be successful, a Russian leader cannot, for example, give up territories. Mm-hmm. That is something Russians would never accept. When someone is destroying the country, mm-hmm. he's not a leader. Of course, the West was applauding Gorbachev for destroying the Soviet Union, but mm-hmm. that's not what the Russians would applaud, mm-hmm. definitely. A leader should not humiliate Russia. Mm-hmm. When Russia it was absolutely ignored, for example, like in the 90s, mm-hmm. In the world, and no one put a damn on what mm-hmm. Russia was saying. Mm-hmm. That is something Russians don't like. Mm-hmm. As for checks and balances, you know, Putin will never do something against real public opinion, mm-hmm. though there can be certain policies mm-hmm. which are unpopular, like pension reform, for example. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Unpopular everywhere, but that means it's made out of necessity, and people made to understand that this is done of necessity and not mm-hmm. against their will. Mm-hmm. So as of now, of course, a democracy, in my view, is, yes, pursuing the policy promoted by the majority of the people. Mm-hmm. Putin has support of 80% of the public. What is the rating of the Western leaders?
Mm-hmm. Much lower, especially these governments who are still in charge right now. Probably there will be
change. Well, I think Meloni is the highest, yeah. And she is about 30%, mm-hmm. and all the rest are much less. Yeah. Are the governments reflecting the interests mm-hmm. of the minority of the mm-hmm. people? Mm-hmm. Democratic? Mm-hmm. That's the question mm-hmm. for me. Yeah. So for Russians, a good leader, a strong leader who promotes the country, who makes the economy grow, who does not lose territories, mm-hmm. and who make Russia great again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, one could argue, if I could understand your government system correctly, that the Russian president has a lot of power. That means this, the parliament cannot overrule him, cannot stop him. And from a Swiss perspective, we have an extremely weak leadership in our government, which has the advantage for the politician that he gets a lot of information, you know, from the parliament. They decide like this, or you have the referendum. If the people don't like what the government is doing, they can take an initiative of themselves, or they can blockade a veto and a law that has been passed by the government, which are always signals from reality to the leadership. And I imagine in Russia it must be extremely difficult for a president to rule this country, because in my view, but probably I'm wrong, the institutions are not so strong. I mean, there is much more responsibility on the side of the leader. Where does he know what the people want in this huge, in this enormous country? I mean, this is something it's hard to understand, because our leaders are somehow imprisoned by these checks and balances, by a lot of controls, and they do not have even the power to make these decisions that like President Putin can do.
Well, Putin is the best informed person on earth, first place. Mm-hmm. So he knows what people think. Mm-hmm. He, as I've said, they conduct public opinion polls for the president every week. Mm-hmm. It's a wide range of issues on which he's polled. As for the laws are not adopted by Putin. The mm-hmm. laws are adopted by the State Duma mm-hmm. and the Council of the Federation, mm-hmm. where I'm sitting, among other things. And the legislative power is with us, with the government, and with the president. And
but could you stop the president with Duma? Could you say, well, Mr. President, now you went too far, like they did with Richard Nixon in the 70s, where they threatened him that he had to resign because of Watergate?
Well, it's possible to imagine, of course, because and it happened not once in the 90s when mm-hmm. Yeltsin was his, you know, there were several votes of
impeachment or
on impeachment of the president of Yeltsin. They couldn't get enough votes. As for Putin, there were no such tries because, first of all, his party has a majority in, mm-hmm. in the Duma. It's very hard to imagine Duma initiate a vote of no confidence. We can initiate a vote of no confidence to the cabinet, of course. Mm-hmm. But again, much depends on the relationship between the branches. And as of now, we work quite harmonially, which mm-hmm. I would say. It's not a confrontational system. We have five parties in the Duma, but the United Russia has more than half. So that means they have, we have a control mm-hmm. of both the government and the presidency. And now, of course, all the members of the cabinet are appointed mm-hmm. by the Duma.
What would you say, just in a few short remarks, what would you say from your observation is the strongest quality of Vladimir Putin, probably the quality that is totally unconsidered and not appreciated in the West? What makes him the person, the politician he is in your eyes?
He's smart. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two and number three. Mm-hmm. And he really understands Russia. Mm-hmm. He has a feeling of Russia. And he's in tune with the country, mm-hmm. which is not typical for Russian leaders. Mm-hmm. But I think now Russians are quite happy with mm-hmm. having Putin there.
He's smart. He's a smart leader. How smart was his decision to deploy troops into Ukraine? In the interview he did with Oliver Stone back in 2015, 16, 17, he said it's a bad development. The worst case scenario would be that there would be open war in Ukraine, that Russian troops had to enter. I talked to a lot of people here in Moscow, and there are some guys who say, well, it was inevitable, he had to do it. But then there are others who say, well, it probably was a mistake, we do not know yet. What would you say? Was this a smart decision in February 2022, not even the foreign minister Lavrov, I learned, knew about it in advance. It must have been a rather lonely decision by the president.
Yes, of course, that was president's decision, the decision for him to make. Well, first of all, you need to put yourself in Putin's shoes. Just imagine a situation. It's not Russia, it's the United States of America. For some reason, the state of Texas secedes, which is possible. Texas happens. And Russia and China mastermind a military bloc with Latin American countries, which include Mexico.
Coming out of Venezuela?
Including Mexico.
Right.
So they are now part of the Russia-China-led military bloc. And there is a separate state of Texas. And all of a sudden, you know, Russia and China mastermind a coup in Austin, Texas, and put the government, which decides to be part of the Russia-China bloc. And then they receive military support from Russia and China and start the war against those Americans living in Texas who still speak English. Mm-hmm. Do you think Americans would intervene in a situation like that?
Or do I think they would wait several years until they intervene?
So that's probably the question people ask here. Why wait several years? That's exactly what happened, you see? And now we have a situation then this secessionist group in Texas is getting weapons to hit the territory of the United States. Mm-hmm. That's where we are now. That is the point we are now. Mm-hmm. So if you look from this perspective, you'd probably understand that there was no way out. Mm-hmm. Of course, the question people ask, why so late? Mm-hmm. It was existential threat. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if Russia and China were putting, you know, their missiles with nuclear weapons mm-hmm. in northern Texas, mm-hmm. probably America will have mm-hmm. some reservations about that and regard it as existential. Mm-hmm. I can remind you just a small thing, which was the Cuban Missile Crisis, mm-hmm. which was nothing compared to what Americans are doing in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. With Russia, Soviet Union mm-hmm. Putting a few missiles there, mm-hmm. and America was ready to go mm-hmm. into the whole-scale nuclear war.
Our leading newspapers, television stations, intellectuals, politicians, the vast majority, they are saying, well, Ukraine was an independent country. They gave up all their nuclear arms. They refrained from entering NATO, which was a mistake. And Russia, from its imperial character, is unable to accept the independence of this country. They want to rebuild the old Soviet Union. And what we are doing on the Western side is defending the right of self-determination of Ukraine. What is wrong with this argument?
I think we would have said the same thing about Texas, yes. That mm-hmm. we are defending the sovereignty of Texans mm-hmm. who want to be independent from the mm-hmm. United States. You know, everything depends on the perspective. From our viewpoint, it's an existential threat from the biggest military alliance in the world.
And why is it an existential threat?
Because nuclear weapons in Ukraine on Russian borders mm-hmm. is existential threat to Russia.
Because it is so fast, it takes only a few minutes.
Just a few minutes. Another thing, we also read American doctrinal documents, mm-hmm. like national security concept, and the nuclear posture. By the way, the recent NATO doctrine, they're all about eliminating Russia. NATO is an instrument, of American instrument, to eliminate Russia. And that's the only mission of that military bloc. And NATO accounts for 80% of all military expenditures on Earth. Mm. There are 400 American military bases in Eastern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. There is not a single Russian military base in Western Hemisphere. There are 400 American military bases around the borders of Russia. Mm-hmm. America is a country which aim is to run the world. And here are a few countries, now there are more than few, mm-hmm. which are on the way. Mm-hmm. And Russia is definitely the major obstacle, because Russia is the only country on Earth mm-hmm. which can eliminate the United States. Mm-hmm. We have a capacity of, you know, maybe tenfold eliminating mm-hmm. of America because of our nuclear potential. Mm-hmm. And that's why we are the major obstacle for American global domination. Mm-hmm. And that's why they'll do their best to destroy us. From that point of view, mm-hmm. we do not regard NATO as an instrument of democracy and something peace. Like mm-hmm. that. We also read things and we have good intelligence on things.
I come from a small country, very small country, who gave up its imperial ambitions in the 16th century when we lost in the outskirts of Milan and withdrew behind the mountains. For us, this is totally absurd what's happening now on the world stage. You have this great predator countries, this huge armed to the teeth countries like the United States, like Russia. And probably not few people in Switzerland would argue, they would say, well, the Russians, they are paranoid. Why do the Americans want to destroy Russia? I mean, the Americans, they basically want to make money. They want to sell their products. And they want to have good relationships. Isn't there something that you would think Russia made a mistake or, you know, had its own contribution to create a negative attitude in the West?
I don't think Russia made any mistake. Actually, Putin had a good answer to the question about his own mistakes. Mm-hmm. He was asked the mistake, what was his mistake vis-a-vis the West? And he said, I trusted you. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the major mistake. There is no way to trust the West. Mm-hmm. It's not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Because the West has a long-standing history of aggression, colonization, wars. We experienced many aggressions from the West, mm-hmm. be it Napoleon or Hitler. Mm-hmm. What we regard now, NATO is regarded more or less like a Fourth Reich. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's no different. Mm-hmm. The European Union actually is completely the same composition mm-hmm. as the Third Reich. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's countries which were part of Germany, mm-hmm. German allies occupied by Germany, mm-hmm. working for Germany during World War II. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. the European Union. The losers in World War II is the European Union now. Mm-hmm. The West has a huge history of killing millions of people mm-hmm. After World War II, in Korea, mm-hmm. in Vietnam, mm-hmm. in Afghanistan, in Iraq, mm-hmm. in Libya, in Syria, everywhere. Yeah. So we do not regard the West as a peaceful, nice alliance. Mm-hmm. Ask the people who lived under colonial rule in Africa, mm-hmm. what do they think about the West? Ask the people in the Southeast Asia, what do they think about the West? Mm-hmm. Even in Latin America, ask people, what do they think about the West? Mm-hmm. Now, the biggest change in the world is that this West, that is 12% of the human race, is not regarded mm-hmm. as to be the top mm-hmm. of the world mm-hmm. because there is a global majority which thinks differently. Mm. And really regards the West as an American-led alliance of countries which goal is to promote American global hegemony and nothing else.
Is the war in the Ukraine something like the fundamental catastrophe of the 21st century as the First World War in the 20th century? Can it turn into a really horrible, totally destructive world war? How close are we to that scenario?
You see, most of the important developments in human history were not predicted. So we cannot predict what's going to happen. But definitely if we think in historic terms, centuries begin not exactly at the calendar dimension. You know, the 20th century did not begin in 1901.
The first January of 1900.
Yeah, it was not first January 1900, probably, but July, August 1914. The same, I think, for the 21st century. It began in February 2022. Mm-hmm. The world will never be the same. Russia will never be the same. Russia has become stronger in all dimensions, militarily, economically, psychologically. And we are absolutely sure that we should preserve our security and eliminate existential threats for any foreseeable future, whatever it takes. And we're not going to stop because someone in the West would say, oh, okay, let's stop. Mm-hmm. Russia will agree. You know what are the Russian demands mm-hmm. now. It's demilitarized, denazified Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We had nothing against Ukraine, you know. We had friendly relations with Ukraine before they masterminded the coup and started the war against the Russians in the mm-hmm. east. We regard the Ukrainians as brothers. Mm-hmm. It's a civil war, it's a tragedy. Mm-hmm. It's not about Ukraine.
What is it about? I mean, that was the next question.
It's about protecting Russia from American military threat. Mm-hmm. Which is on Ukrainian soil.
I mean, that's interesting. In the West, if you read the papers, you listen to the politicians, they say, well, this war is about self-defense of the democratic West against the autocratic East. It's a clash of civilizations. It's trying to prevent the imperial expansion of Russia. What would you say at the very core? Is this war basically fundamentally about?
Well, this war basically fundamentally about prevention of American existential military threat to Russia, mm-hmm. as I've said. Mm-hmm. But in general, speaking about this whole Russia imperialism stuff, I always want to ask, and sometimes ask Western politicians, what did Russia did wrong to your country, to Switzerland, to France?
Also Switzerland, nothing. We got neutrality thanks to the first
Tsar Alexander. To United Kingdom, to Spain, to America, to Canada. Did we do anything wrong to these countries? Did we ever attack them or what? Never did that. Mm. They're not going to do that. And all this, nonsense, mm-hmm. can put it mildly, mm-hmm. about Russian aggressiveness, its desire to attack Western nations. Looking at history, at least take last 1,000 years, there was not a single instance that Russia on its own decided to attack any Western country. Mm-hmm. There were many, many instances. Mm-hmm. when the Western countries decided to attack Russia many times.
Yeah. You're saying that this attitude, this superiority complex, is deeply ingrained in the West. But I would argue, as someone who grew up in the West, this is not always the Western case. I mean, there have been attempts. There have been attempts of probably another, you know, whatever display of Western culture, whatever you want to call it. But how do you see, I mean, what would you say is wrong with the West? I mean, would you really say it's the nature of the West, or is there something that is now particularly wrong with the West? Because I would say, I mean, we are now in a state of ideological frenzy with woke culture, with this moralism, with this superiority complex. But this seems for me like an aberration. This is like throwing Western values out of the window. How do you analyze the West?
Well,
Europe.
Unfortunately, I'll have to finish.
Yeah, sure.
So, to make a long story short, by far the history of the West, and mostly of the United States in the last two centuries, was the history of a civilization or country which decided to be on top of the global food chain. And successfully did that. You know, so the Western model cannot be copied because it is being on top of the food chain. There are not so many places there left, you know, and America is on top, and you cannot copy American model because it's there. All the financial flows and all the capital flows are there. And that's their model, by colonizing the rest of the world. And pumping resources, capital, and so on and so forth. And now it looks like it's all over. The other country decided that it's hard time to stop robbing them. And that's it. And that's what's happening. Russia said, that's it. Africa is saying, that's it. China is saying, that's it. India is saying, that's it. Latin America is saying, that's it. And so now what is happening, America still have only Western Europe to rob. That's what they're doing now, by the way, by selling them expensive LNG instead of cheap Russian pipeline gas. And this model is collapsing. And the West does not understand, I think, that this model is collapsing. And they are not cannot be an example in anything. Especially, of course, in politics, we see American presidential election. In economics, we see what's Europe is the most stagnant economic part of the world. And in terms of morale, because this woke culture is something which is viewed by the other 90% of the population in the world as absolute nonsense.
But on the other hand, and this is that's very interesting what you're saying, but on the other hand, Russia is also, you could say, a deeply Western country. I mean, you are a deeply European. Let's phrase it like this: you are a European country. No. There are a lot of European elements in your culture, in your music, which is mutually inspiring. You have been inspired by the West. Don't you see any positive trait in the Western civilization, which has been inspiring to Russia too? And well, if I look at you, you are also a highly cultivated man. You know probably more about German literature than many Germans.
I think more than absolutely majority of Germans. The same about American literature, French literature, British literature.
So they can't be everything.
But I know somewhat less than the Chinese about the Chinese literature. For example, though, I know a lot about Chinese literature, and I know a lot about Indian literature, and I know a lot about Iranian literature, and I even know something about South African literature, not to say about Brazilian literature. Russians are. Russia is not Europe. On the other hand, when you say Europe, what is the biggest European country geographically? Russia. What is the biggest town in Europe? Moscow. And so on. So looking from that perspective, we are Europe. And I think the Russians now keeping themselves more of the Western European culture. Which you mean by the European culture.
So there can't be everything wrong about this culture if you see yourself as a guardian of this culture.
No, we are the guardians of culture. And you are not the guardians of your own culture. That's the difference. We're guardians of global culture, and we don't consider...
Well, I wanted you to say something positive about the West.
We do not consider the Western culture being better than than Indian culture. And Russia is... You still regard Russia, still tend to regard Russia as inferior Europe, you know? And that's not the case because we're not, first, we're not inferior. And two, we are Russia. Russia, which is not European, but I would, it's not Eurasian. It's Euro-Pacific. And being Euro-Pacific and looking at the world in the Euro-Pacific way, in the Russian way, from the point of view of Russian civilization, you see Europe as a small appendage of Eurasia.
Sure.
Eurasia is now coming together. It's the Eurasia of Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Eurasia of BRICS. There is a small appendix over there, which is called the Western Europe, which is not part of that system, but considers to be very important.
Sure. But as a Swiss, I would say we are never looking down on other cultures, especially on Russia, which is endlessly fascinating. And we have also our chunk of European domination against Switzerland. One very last question. What has to happen, Mr. Nikonov, that we have, again, good relationships? I mean, I think back 20 years, Germany, Russia, that was a very good perspective, President Putin being at the Bundestag. I mean, there have been, from the Russian side, from the Western side, attempts to build a great relationship. At the moment, everything is in shatters. Where is the silver lining on the horizon? What has to happen that there will be good relations between Western Europe and Central Europe or Eastern Europe, represented by Russia?
You know, now we have good relations with all the world except the West. We have perfect relations with China, which has population which is, you know, much bigger than the combined West. With India, Africa, Latin America, everything except the West. The problem is in the West, because that's the only civilization which cannot talk with other civilizations on equal basis. They always talk from above. They always tell, you must, you should. We are not supposed to do anything to the West, you know. And when you say, you must, oh, come on. Don't tell us. The problem is with the West. When they come to terms with the understanding that they're just one of the civilizations, not the civilization, then probably things may change. Because from our perspective, the only time when we had good relations with the West, when Russia was falling apart, that was the time when it satisfied the West. Since we're not going to fall apart anymore, I don't think we're going to please you too much. But you have to come to grips with the diminishing role of the West in today's world, and to accept yourself as one of the others and not the one on top.
Thank you very much for this conversation, okay. Mr. Nikonov. Thank you.